Our next case for argument is Leva versus Robbins. We are ready to hear from the appellant.
Thank you, Judge. If it pleases the court, my name is Robert Sykes. I want to talk for a moment about the importance of fences. 10 years ago, a young client of mine, a young woman, was southbound on I-15. I apologize for my cough. About 60 miles north of Salt Lake in a rural area. And she hit a large bull on the road. Let me just turn this to... They sent these
now you're me. In the courtroom. That's lovely. Okay.
Well, they sent
it doesn't really
me.
Matter. We'd really like to hear from you.
Okay. But she hit a large bull in the road and it destroyed her car and gave her a significant brain injury. We got out there right away and found out that the fence had not been maintained. Now, fences in rural areas prevent serious injury and death. We're talking today about qualified immunity and metaphorical fences. It's an important doctrine. It's a robust doctrine. It protects legitimate police functions. Fences are rules. And without rules for qualified immunity, qualified immunity bulls get on the road. They can harm innocents and they can damage constitutional rights. Rule number one, qualified immunity is only for police work, for to protect their discretionary functions. In Elder versus Holloway, U.S. Supreme Court said that the central purpose of qualified immunity was, quote, to protect them from undue interference with their duties, citing Harlow versus Fitzgerald. In Butts versus Economu, the U.S. Supreme Court said it doesn't protect actions, quote, manifestly beyond their line of duty. This case in Furschbach versus Southwest Airlines, this court said the officers must act in furtherance of legitimate law enforcement interests. It also said there's no qualified immunity if a prank in this case furthers must act in furtherance of legitimate law enforcement interest, and there's no qualified immunity for a prank that furthers no public interest. Now, in this case, Trooper Robbins, his own words, said that the stop was a joke between friends. On the harassment, he said, I thought she welcomed it. He was demoted by his own agency. He was removed from the assignment, demoted from sergeant down to trooper, two levels. And this case, or this court said in Valverde versus Dodge in 2020, Judge Hartz and Carson were on that panel, talked about the calculus of reasonableness for qualified immunity. Split-second judgments, tense, uncertain, rapidly evolving situations. You don't have that here, and you don't need qualified immunity to protect an officer from personal flirtation and illegal stops.
Let me see if I understand what you're arguing here. Are you arguing that we don't even need to do a qualified immunity analysis, i.e. determine whether there was a violation of a constitutional right, whether it was clearly established because there's no qualified immunity here because it wasn't a police function?
That's what I'm saying, Judge. And, okay. And that's what you've said. That's what this court has said in the first case.
Well, if we don't go there, can we go back to the requirements that Judge Carson has just voiced? What is your violation of constitutional law?
Okay.
And what clearly established law do you have to support it?
Good question. The violation of constitutional law with the traffic stop first, okay? By the way, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes if I could.
Time is your own. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. The traffic stop, we have 50 years, at least, of traffic stop law. It says that you cannot pull somebody over unless you have reasonable, articulable suspicion, okay? And that's pretty clear in the law. As far as the sexual harassment, the ongoing sexual harassment, that's pretty clear too. A public official, an officer in this case, cannot harass a private citizen.
So the constitutional violation on the first one is the Fourth Amendment?
Fourth Amendment and 14th.
And the 14th Amendment? And
right.
The 14th Amendment on the second?
On the second one.
Okay.
Well, yeah, on sexual harassment, 14th Amendment. Now, I hope I've answered your question, Judge Carson. The second fence I want to talk about is the no scavenger hunt fence. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court has been very clear in Hope versus Peltzer that, quote, even novel factual circumstances, okay, can be the basis of liability. They, quote, we expressly rejected a requirement that previous cases be fundamentally similar. This circuit in Casey versus City of Federal Heights said the Hope decision shifted the qualified immunity analysis from a scavenger hunt for prior cases with precisely the same facts. Okay. Now the trial court in this case found that the stop violated the Fourth Amendment. Very clear. I put that in the brief. He found that a reasonable jury could find that Heather was sexually harassed. Okay. But then he sent us on a scavenger hunt and on page 23 of his decision, he wanted us to find, for example, cases with, quote, pre-existing and ongoing relationship between the officer and the citizen and an exchange of text messages concerning the stop, both before and after the stop, and a different location for the stop than initially identified.
Let's talk about the stop first.
Okay.
Did she consent to the stop at issue?
No.
Does she say in her complaint that she did not consent to it?
She did. And their position was that a text exchange 2 hours before, okay, on I-15 in Utah County, gave him that she had consented, and she didn't respond to the last text message. I put that in the brief, and she goes somewhere else, does her business, and comes back 2 hours later, Your Honors, 2 hours later on a different road, on a different location. And she's scared to death because the officer turns on his lights. She doesn't know who it is. She has to pull over. She can't just ignore flashing lights. And then she said she was, quote, creeped out when he showed up. How did he know where she was? She's a single woman, single mother at home with three children. She's going home, and this officer pulls her over for no reason. Just a flirt. Now,
let me ask you a question about the text messages and the consent.
Yes.
Does she anywhere in that text string say, yes, pull me over, I'm looking forward to seeing you, be great if you pull me over? I mean, it seems to me at best the text string establishes that she didn't respond to him saying, I'm going to pull you over.
Yeah, she didn't respond, Judge. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And she didn't respond. And the problem, and no, she didn't welcome it. She didn't want it. The problem with this argument, when I go on a scavenger hunt, it allows bulls on the interstate at night. It validates harassers and rapists' dream excuse. She welcomed it. It validates subjectivity. I thought she consented. Okay. Every woman, if this decision comes down the way the defense wants it, every woman will be at greater risk for harassment and abuse, and worse. And it engenders great disrespect for the law.
Is it your position that what we have to do is find that there's another case that says you can't pull someone over without reasonable suspicion, or it's a constitutional violation, and that if we have that case, that it's clearly established?
That was the trial court's position. The trial court, as I read you a minute ago, they wanted a case where there's an ongoing relationship between the officer of some kind and exchange of text messages. That's on page 23. They wanted the exact factual situation.
I'm asking you sort of the opposite. Are you saying all we need to have is a case that says that a police officer can't pull someone over without reasonable suspicion?
No, that's far too general. What I'm saying is that the case law has to give fair warning. Fair warning.
Well, what's your case?
Apparent. And there are lots of cases that say that. Now, for example, you said in 2020, State of Smart versus City of Wichita, our analysis is not a scavenger hunt for prior cases with precisely the same facts. A prior case need not be exactly parallel to the conduct here before the officials to have been on notice of clearly established law. Okay.
Right. So my question
is crucial.
What case do you have that put them on notice?
Okay. On the traffic stop, Botero Ospina. I quoted that in the brief. Okay. It said, and let me just grab that real quickly.
You're running out of time here. You can just tell me the case.
No, but that said, you can't pull somebody over, and your subjective reasons don't matter. They don't matter. Okay. And that case was argued, and on the, sexual harassment, Johnson versus Martin, 10th Circuit case,
Let me focus, since we were almost out of time. I want to focus on the sexual harassment outside of the traffic stop. So if you have two state employees working in an office together and one sexually harasses the other, is that a violation of the Constitution?
Well, it could be. That's not this case. But it certainly could be, especially if the state knew about it and tolerated it. That certainly would be.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just the that would be for a offensive work environment, hostile work environment. But I think our cases indicate that if it's just one employee harassing another, there's not a violation unless there's some sort of supervisory relationship.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a matter. So what's essential here, it seems to me, is that there be some sort of extra power, extra authority conferred on the harasser by state law. And that would be the case with the traffic stop. But I don't understand how it is with the other activity that you consider sexual harassment. He's not acting in that circumstance, that harassment. He's not acting as a police officer with law enforcement powers. He's acting as a contractor. It's two people who are one's the provider of services and one's a purchaser of services. And that's their relationship there. And I'm not aware of any cases saying, maybe you can help me on this, saying that that provides the power imbalance that can justify, that can support a constitutional claim for sex harassment.
I respectfully disagree, Judge, with the way you phrased that. He has power over her. He runs the heavy duty towing rotation. She's a secretary. Her job is to make sure they get their fair share of referrals. And he can cut them off and threaten to do it. That's the power he had.
Well, but that's power only through contract. She could also say, we're not going to provide you any towing services because you're a jerk. And that would not help him in his job at all. They wouldn't get
these are $25,000 tows. It's important. It's a very valuable contract to have.
Yeah. And it's also, and they cost a lot because they're really important.
That's right.
When you have a contract relationship, we generally assume that there's bargaining power on each side. So
I only have a few more seconds.
The question is whether you have any cases where the authority is that conferred by contract. Every case I saw was either a supervisor of the employee or someone who had law enforcement power could deny a license or something like that.
Johnson versus Martin.
Do you have any cases in which the relationship involved is a contract relationship?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you mean by contract relationship. The state supervised this towing. There was a contract, yes, but the state supervised, Your Honor, supervised the heavy duty towing rotation. Let me just close with
to the towing company was just a contract relationship, was it?
I think I cited cases that do that, but in closing, let me just say,
I don't think you did,
Jones versus Hunt. Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
I didn't see any you cited, but
They're in. I think it's point two, about 27 to 40, pages 27 to 40. But here's what Jones versus Hunt said about these cases. Implicit in the court's reasoning is the recognition that officials committing outrageous yet sui generis constitutional violations ought not to shield their behavior behind qualified immunity simply because another official has not previously had the audacity to commit a similar transgression. And that's what we've got here. In that case, they hauled some little girl into a office at school and tried to persuade her to switch custody, you know, and there were no cases on that. I would just close by saying one more thing. As you said, in Bond versus Tahlequah City, and on December 1, 2020, Judge McHugh said, look, you could look at this different ways, okay? But there are questions of fact where a reasonable jury could differ on how to view these facts. And at the very least, a reasonable jury could differ on whether there was consent, okay? And so I urge you, I think it's important for the women of our country and our circuit to have a good, strong opinion. You cannot sexually harass a woman the way this officer did.
Thank you. Thank you. We have your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, Cliff Peterson for Blaine Robbins. I would first begin by noting that this is Leyva's burden to show that the law was clearly established. And if I understood counsel a moment ago, conceded that it was not enough for someone just to cite case law saying you have to have probable cause to initiate a traffic stop. He said that's not enough. That's exactly what he gave the district court. He just gave general Hornbook principles about probable cause to initiate a traffic stop. That's what he's done now on appeal. We submit that he's failed to meet his heavy burden to show that the law was in fact clearly established.
Well, isn't it really that simple? She's really pulled over by this patrolman at night with his lights. She doesn't know it's him. It's not any place that they had talked about potentially is doing that. And he's pulling her over without reasonable suspicion, probable cause, or anything.
Well,
a flat out Fourth Amendment violation?
Well, as the district court correctly noted, the law was not clearly established that consent cannot play into this analysis. In the midst of the back and forth,
she does not concede consent. She does not concede that fact.
Well, I know that she tries to.
You're looking at this clearly established law question as though consent were a part of the question.
Well, consent is part of the analysis, as the district court said, because let's change the facts just a little. Let's say the text said, come pull me over. A reasonable officer, it would not be obvious. There's no case putting that officer on notice that he could not pull her over in response to a direct request, an explicit request, please pull me over. I want to see you. Let's say she says that. What we're saying here is that the facts aren't that far removed. She may retcon the conversation, but objectively, she concedes that the text messages speak for themselves. They say what they say, and that is, he says, I'll come. She says, I have a document. He says, can you give me the document? She says, stand by, I'm on the freeway. He says, I'll pull you over. She gives him the mile marker number. She tells him what color car she is. And critically, the next day, he says, I thought you were sore at me for pulling you over, and she says, no. I think in the context of all of these circumstances, she consented to the, and a reasonable officer would have seen that as consent to pull her over. And most importantly, there's not a case putting this beyond debate that every reasonable officer in the midst of this back and forth and this ongoing relationship would have known beyond debate that you could not consent to a traffic stop. So we think the district court got it right.
Let me stop you for a minute. So you concede there was no reasonable suspicion or probable cause to pull her over.
Well, there was a cracked windshield, and that's in the record. Well, in his deposition, he said that wasn't the reason. He pulled her over because he thought she consented.
Yeah, he said it was a joke.
Yeah, well, a joke brought on by her consent, and then they talked.
Okay, well, he didn't. That's not exactly what he said. Okay, hold on. So in the text messages, you've got to agree also that there's no express agreement in those text messages that he can pull her over.
Well, I think that objectively, there's enough that any mistake in how that was interpreted as a reasonable mistake and qualified immunity should apply.
Okay, well, you're dodging my question. Okay. So okay. Do you agree it was not an express consent?
I agree. I gave you the hypothetical. The hypothetical didn't happen. She didn't actually say, please pull me over. Yeah, okay. You're right.
And so the next thing we got to look at then is was it close enough?
Right.
Right. And so would you agree with me that at best, she was silent about whether he could pull her over or not, whether she agreed that that was okay?
Well, she could have not responded at all. But she did. She gave him the mile marker number, and she the next day said she wasn't sore about it. So
that's sort of post hoc reasoning, isn't it? I mean,
well, I think it objectively shows
consistent with what her attitude was the day before.
Well, I think it's consistent, and I think it shows what she was thinking the day before. It's an objective record of what she was thinking at the time. Sure.
I mean, a reasonable jury could determine that her statements from the next day were an attempt to try to get him to leave her alone and not, you know, continue pestering her. If she just said, no, I'm not mad. Whereas if she said, yeah, I'm pretty mad about it, then he might have made attempts to contact her to make amends.
Yes, Judge, that's correct. And the judge, in fact, specifically held that. He held that there was a reasonable jury could conclude that there was a First Amendment or Fourth Amendment violation. But that's a different question of whether qualified immunity applies, because qualified immunity applies if the law does not put him on notice.
So if we agree, if we conclude as a court that there was no consent, that at best there's a fact issue as to consent, do you agree there's no qualified immunity?
No, because even if there, well, if you're going to go into the facts and basically make the conclusion, I think you still have to look at the possibility that an officer could objectively make a reasonable mistake. Could an objectively mistaken officer reasonably construe these text messages, even if a jury might conclude otherwise, but could a reasonable mistake happen such that this appears to be consent? I think that's all we need to get to qualified immunity.
Okay, so you want us to make that determination as a matter of law and not look at it and say, wow, this seems tied up with facts here on determining whether...
And I think more to the point is that even if she didn't expressly consent, the law was not... did not put him on notice. The law was not clear that
he does not know that he cannot pull people over at night on a highway with his lights on without probable cause or reasonable suspicion. He does not know that.
Judge Shelby said the consent is not clearly established. There's only three cases that talk about consent in the context of these kinds of traffic stops.
But in answer to my question, does he not know that he cannot pull people over without reasonable suspicion or probable cause?
But he also knows that the Supreme Court has said that consensual encounters do not implicate the Fourth Amendment. That's an equally valid pillar of the law. You have numerous statements by the Supreme Court and this circuit that consent does not implicate the Fourth Amendment. So here he is faced with apparent consent, and you have this other Hornbrook principles that you need probable cause too. But if so,
it seems to me that goes to the question of whether there was a constitutional violation.
Well,
it's the burden conceded.
Well, that the judge found that a reasonable juror could conclude there was a constitutional violation. That's a different question. They still have to prove their case.
You don't raise it on appeal.
Well,
you don't contend on appeal that there was no constitutional violation.
Well, we don't disagree that the reasonable juror could conclude. We believe if this goes to trial, that we would prevail, that the juror would believe the more competent evidence that there was consent.
Fair enough. But as part of this appeal, you've not argued that
there was
no constitutional violation.
Right. We're not challenging the district court's conclusion that a reasonable juror construing the facts in the light most favorable to Leyva could find a violation. We're not disputing that.
Let me ask a question. I thought you were arguing that this was a prank, and it's not clearly established that a prank can't be a violation, or it's not clearly established that a prank could be a violation, but you're not arguing that.
We're not arguing that there's sort of a lack of clarity. No, we're not arguing about prank. No, he did say it was a prank, but it was a prank based on consent. It wasn't only
that the officer could have reasonably thought that he had consent to do this,
and that the law did not put him on notice that he couldn't. That basically consent cannot even factor at all into the calculus. There are three cases. The district court noted there were only three cases involving consent and traffic stops. And Leyva did not even engage in those three cases on appeal. She didn't even take the district court to task and say, well, here's why this case applies or this one doesn't. So we believe that she's failed completely to meet her burden of persuasion on appeal by not engaging with the district court's.
But even on your theory that the officer could reasonably have interpreted her text messages as establishing consent, isn't that a jury issue?
Well, jury may ultimately be the ones to decide that. But what we're saying is,
well, if the jury is the one that ultimately decide that.
Let me try to phrase it this way, Judge. When you have text messages that on their face objectively give implied consent, that basically on their face, they objectively could be reasonably mistaken as consent, coupled with the fact that there is not existing case law saying that consent never factors into the equation. What we're saying is that given both of those, there's no materially similar circumstances, and there's no obvious clarity. Yeah. There's no case law that applies with obvious clarity to this situation. Did Your Honor have a question?
Well, it just seems to me the jury should be the one to decide whether someone could reasonably interpret her texts as constituting consent.
Well, I understand the point. I appreciate that. I think also, though, that courts can also make a decision on reasonableness, too, and that these text messages speak for themselves, and that when faced with these text messages in an ongoing back and forth, this is not just something out of the blue. This is after the first ride along, which after she initiated contact after the first ride along a couple weeks before. So there's an ongoing relationship, clearly.
So do you contend that it was a valid police function for him to pull her over?
Well, to the extent that Mr. Sykes is saying that he was not acting under color of law in any of this, and therefore Section 1983 doesn't apply. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what point he's stipulating to in that regard. He was acting under color of law. That's what they alleged in the complaint.
He was a police car.
He turned the lights on. Yeah, he's a uniformed police officer.
So he was exercising a discretionary police function and turning on his lights and making a traffic stop.
Yes, you are a uniformed in a marked car with lights. You initiate a traffic stop. Yes.
I guess I just sort of wonder how there could ever be consent to that. I understand that if a police officer walks up to someone on the street and starts talking to them, that could be a consensual encounter. But a traffic stop seems remarkably different to me. And I'm just not sure that it's consistent that consent is consistent with a traffic stop. I mean, I don't know. Absent an express statement by the person being pulled over, yeah, pull me over. And I'm still not convinced it's certainly not proper from a policing standpoint.
Well, and the district court agreed with you, Your Honor. The district court said, I don't think you could ever really consent to a traffic stop, but it's a different question. Was it clearly established? The qualified immunity question is a different question. And if this court were to rule in this case, then yes, it would be beyond debate that you could never consent to a traffic stop, but it's not beyond debate now, even with the district court's order. There's no appellate decision from this circuit. There's no Supreme Court decision. There's no consensus of the other circuits. And certainly Leyva hasn't marshaled any cases from other circuits. She hasn't demonstrated case law from this circuit or the Supreme Court that would put the issue beyond debate. So that, again, that's a separate question. You can have a constitutional violation, but the law was not clearly established. And so prospectively going forward, everyone's on notice, but qualified immunity still applies in this case because it was not clearly established at this time. So we asked the court to find that Leyva has not met her burden to show the law was clearly established. The district court got it right. We asked the court to affirm. And if there are no further questions, then we
will... can argue the second claim.
I can argue. Sure, Your Honor. The second claim again, the 14th Amendment claim. It's not obvious when you have a back and forth like this, when there's no evidence from her asking him to stop, no evidence that she expressed that it was unwelcome. She never asked him to stop. She never told him it was unwanted. It was clearly a back and forth. She was initiating as much contact as he was. She was suggesting going to meals. So what we have, the Johnson case is what counsel's mentioned a moment ago, but the district court clearly distinguished the Johnson case as a magnitude difference of misconduct in that case. This case pales in comparison. This is some text messages. He hugged her one time, but unlike the Johnson case, there's no sexual assault. There's no asking for sexual favors in response to doing his job. There's no evidence that he sabotaged
Would a reasonable officer think that his conduct toward this individual was proper and within his duties?
Yes, because she never said stop. She never said it was unwanted. On these, when you look at the text messages, speak for themselves. It was, yes, it was a whole lot of nonsense. So
we're getting down to she asked for it. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. But she didn't say stop. She actually initiated much of the conversation. She initiated some of the innuendo and the flirtatious conversations. And so our position is, on a whole, this was a mutually engaging relationship, text exchange. And
it seems again a lot like the first issue, that it becomes a jury question as to who said what to whom and whether or not there was some kind of ongoing relationship and that she consented to all of this. And we're here on qualified immunity, which to me seems like a bit of a stretch for this kind of a claim. But...
Well, again, what case put Officer Robbins on notice that this back and forth was unconstitutional in this context? And again, we say there is none. District court said there was none, and Leyva hasn't shown it. And we ask this court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me thank the court for doing this now and not making us wait a year to meet in person. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for participating. The case is submitted. Thank you both.